T-minus 35. Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Last to arrive, as he so often was, Phil Norris rang the doorbell and waited to be let inside. It was so close to the show's start time that Emma was already locked in her office, sitting upright and staring into the webcam that would carry her into tens of millions of homes around the U.S. and beyond. Upon hearing the bell, she instinctively navigated to a video feed from the front door's outward-facing security camera. Oh yeah, she thought to herself, having forgotten Phil was coming. With her mind eased by his tired but happy-looking face, she then returned to the application that would link her up to the famous RMXT studio in New York. A last-minute check-in with Clark before he was moved to the backstage area from which he would make his surprise entrance had put Emma at ease regarding the kinds of things Billy and Timo were going to talk about, with the intentions of the latter in particular having been playing on her mind, given his endless disdain for William Godfrey. While not quite on the level of Clark, Timo was well-liked by a public who saw him as a straight-talking man whose heart really was in the right place. Fortunately, Clark relayed Timo's understanding that any deep arguments about the best route to interplanetary cooperation with the messengers were better saved for another day, what with Leisha's recent actions and Jan Geller's detestable presence, ensuring that the focus should be on defending the very pursuit of cooperation at all. Joe Crabb was the only panel member Emma didn't have a good handle on, with his position on just about every issue that would be discussed completely unknown. An often abrasive figure who had once fiercely attacked Dan while defending Richard Walker in the fallout of the IDA leak, Crabb had mellowed somewhat since Walker's death without ever going as far as publicly apologizing for some of the things he'd said before it. There was no love lost between Crabb and Geller, but Emma anticipated that he would likely find his voice drowned out in the explosive arguments between the panel's two more clearly defined sides. Emma's glance at the time in the corner of her computer screen revealed that just 3 minutes remained until she went live. She understandably felt some nerves ahead of what would be her first major public appearance in the better part of a year, but Emma was beginning to see the panel as a huge opportunity rather than as a hurdle to be overcome. Because in the context of what she and her family were dealing with at home, nerves were nothing. The fear over what would happen if Piper's powers became public knowledge left little room for mild concerns in Emma's mind, but troublingly, it had been superseded by an even more pressing fear, the fear that Leisha may have already returned home for good, all but closing the door on any hopes that a solution to Piper's problem, or a cure for her condition, could ever come from above. Today was a chance to sell the benefits of cooperation, to unite the world behind a common goal, to show Leisha that the Jan Gellers and demented shooters of the world did not speak for humanity as a whole. The return of the human crew stationed on New Kerguelen, expected home any day now, would necessitate at least one more visit to Earth for the messengers. Whether Sako would be in the returning craft with them, and whether Leisha would still be around to see it, were variables Emma couldn't control. But she hoped that a stellar performance in the next hour would at least ensure a warm welcome for whichever messengers did pilot the craft. On the other side of her office door, Emma heard voices raised in what sounded like amusement. As 3 minutes until showtime ticked down to two, she tested her collar-clipped microphone and put her earbuds in place. She hoped beyond hope that her friends and family would still be joking around in the living room when her work was done, but in the meantime, she needed to tune them out and focus on the task at hand. "Not like you to be late," Mr. Bird said to Phil, speaking from his viewing spot on a dining chair that had been carried in from the kitchen for the larger-than-normal gathering. Tara and Dan were on the couch, with Henry's wheelchair on one side and Piper's crib on the other. The baby was awake, but settled on Tara's lap. "It wouldn't be like me to be late," Phil retorted, "which is why I'm 2 minutes early, Bird."
"Early Bird," Tara said, smiling to herself.
The others laughed, less so at the observation than the fact she found it funny. Phil, whose own home was minimally decorated, didn't read anything into the total absence of small items around the living room. Henry hadn't touched on the subject again today, despite having seen through the variations and the explanations he'd received so far, but he intended to do so once Mr. Bird, and now Phil, were gone. After saying his first hellos to Dan, Tara, and Piper in what felt like far too long,
Phil took his seat in the vacant dining chair next to Mr. Bird's.
Where have you been? Mr. Bird asked, curious rather than suspicious. What was the point in closing the grill so early if you didn't plan on coming here until the last minute?
I didn't plan on cutting it so fine, Phil replied. I went to meet a guy in the city and he tried to lowball me on a deal we'd already agreed, so things took a little longer than expected.
Dan shook his head and chuckled. Phil was Phil, into a little bit of everything, with some of it often occupying decidedly gray areas, but his own mind was too full of other things to wonder much about his latest shenanigans.
You sold them? Henry asked.
Four of them, Phil replied. 700% profit, Henry boy. I wasn't going to do any business today, but the guy wanted one for each of his family, and at that price, I couldn't say no. And don't get me wrong, I hope Emma calms all this stuff down today, but when she does, and when this Leisha hysteria is dead, the street price is going to fall. Not down to anywhere near what I paid, but probably half of where it is today, so, you know, it was good to move some stock at the high point. I'll play it by ear and probably hang on to a few for a while, in case there's ever another surge.
After these Leisha and Emma referencing comments, which raised so many more questions than answers, Dan's mind suddenly did have room to wonder about Phil's shenanigans.
What have you been selling that has anything to do with what happened in Argentina? He asked, getting right to the heart of it.
Have you ever heard of Alan Greatorex? Phil asked. Or the Greatorex 3000?
Dan shook his head. Next to him, Tara pulled her phone from her pocket and rapidly searched online for the name while supporting Piper's increasingly sleepy head with her other arm. Before Phil's explanation got past its contextualizing opening, Henry interrupted.
Save it for the commercials, the show's starting.
He was right. Dan reached for the remote control to raise the volume of the projector's speakers, then felt a tap on his leg as soon as he leaned back again on the couch. It was Tara's hand, holding her phone. Dan took a look at the screen and skimmed the opening paragraph of a Blitz Online article. A rare device rumored to block telepathy's effect on anyone who wears it. Could the Greatorex 3000 be our key to understanding and unlocking the messenger's frightening uplift powers? Tara's eyes were waiting for Dan's to finish reading. When he looked up, she whispered what he was already thinking.
We need one.